Good morning, everybody. Light crowd so far. I really think it's going to work better if we can pull together. Can I bring everybody into this middle section so that those who... Great. This little hub is just great, but bring it down, bring it in. I know it's not fun to sit down right where you want to be and then be asked to move, but I think it's going to help that we're having this circle conversation sort of focused... group-focused conversation. Thank you for those who did move. So we are hosting today a group that's speaking out in Harrisonburg as part, this is their speak out day, as part of a peace team community engagement, a tour. You're going to hear a little bit more about it, so I won't give details, but it's my understanding, especially here in the East, in the East Coast. And Tom Benevento from New Community Project is one part, is a member of this peace group and connected us with the speakers who are here today. Various others are in other places here in Harrisonburg, JMU for sure. And maybe we'll hear a little about that as well, what's going on. I'm couching this this movement as intersectional justice work. And that's this bringing folks together who care about justice, dignity for everyone, but tend to focus on one thing, maybe racism, equality, maybe DREAM Act, maybe climate change or climate justice or some other justice issue, and these groups working together in defense of life for the dignity of all life. It reminds me of what Reverend Dr. William Barber has called forth, and that's a poor people's campaign, a poor people's movement that's taking place in capital cities across the U.S. From Mother's Day to the summer solstice. And we first heard about that from Todd Winward, who was here speaking in this chapel. And I want to hear more about these movements that are bringing folks together, activists willing to, through nonviolent public action, protest, even a willingness to be arrested and imprisoned for making excellent trouble, to raise awareness about some of what's killing us. So we're hearing from the peace team today. Their shared work is the celebration and defense of life and all that's beautiful. I got this this statement from their Google Doc that was where the group was articulating their work, and it may have shifted a little bit, and we may hear today about particular aspects of this movement. But I want to read this as a setting. Our group, the Peace Team, for lack of a better name, shares a vision of a multi-layered, decentralized movement rooted in integral nonviolence, a comprehensive way of life nonviolence that balances self-transformation, social and cultural transformation, and bold, direct resistance to the domination system. We find unity spiritually and politically through a shared calling to defend life, to express radical love for the earth and all its inhabitants, and to honor an unshakable commitment to work at the intersections of race, class, gender, sexuality, and more. At this stage, we hold two interconnected strands of the struggle as primary: protecting life in the face of climate catastrophe, and initiating bold, concrete expressions of atonement and reparations to those most impacted by white supremacy. We believe that a team modeling bold, direct resistance to forces of domination and plunder will be best suited to catalyze and pull together the other elements of the integral nonviolence movement we long to be part of. For that reason, we are beginning this effort by bringing together those of us who feel called to that particular strand of our vision. We do not wish or intend to somehow bend the macro movement for justice to our way of doing things. We simply wish to create a space in the larger movement ecosystem where serious, disciplined, nonviolence practitioners can show up as their full selves, shoulder to shoulder with their co-workers in order to bring a unique gift to the struggle. We long to be of service to life and all that's beautiful, and we are committed to doing so with loving, generous, and courageous hearts. The people who have been commissioned or freed to come and be with us today are Christine Nobis of Indigenous Iowa and Ethan Hughes of the Possibility Alliance of Missouri. And we welcome you, and we're eager to hear and learn from you and to join in whatever way that we can this noble effort.
Good morning, everyone. I'm going to start with a hard message, but I think Jesus and the early church didn't ask for us to be safe or comfortable. And the church has unfortunately become a place most often where we go to feel comfortable, where we go to be able to participate in extractivism. We go to a place where we're told, thou shalt not steal, but we sit on stolen land. Trillions of dollars have been extracted and put into our bank accounts that are not ours. So if we really just took that one piece, thou shalt not steal today, you'd have to leave this university, empty your bank account, return all this land back to the original indigenous peoples. So what we're being called as human beings, as Mennonites, as Christians, means the total unraveling of capitalism and the economic structures that, since 1960, have removed 50% of life on the planet. 50% of holy creation has been wiped out in 57 years. I invite you, though, not to slide into shame or guilt today, but to actually let it disturb you. Let it awaken love's fire that God wants to reign around us right now. And so part of our coming together is not to save anything. Coming together is just to be able to, I have two daughters, to look them in the eye, and whatever happens in the future with this great unraveling, to look them and say, I tried everything. Wendell Berry says, our goal is simply to carry love as far as we can carry it in our lifetime and to risk everything. Rumi says, risk everything for love. I don't hear Christ or any of these amazing leaders saying, risk a little bit. It's everything. So we're terrified, those who are coming together. The risk of not being able to see my daughters, the times I've stood in front of fracking operations or going to the governor's office where we occupied the governor's space in North Carolina, and to see that it's all the same thing. The ACP pipeline, 13% of its where it's going through is indigenous-owned territory, and 1% of North Carolina population is indigenous. So we see the constant brutality of 500 years, and we're just saying we can't sit back anymore. Our project gives 20% of anything coming in back to indigenous nations, just as a beginning of trying to heal what we can with reparations. Atonement is a whole nother question for genocide. But I'm challenging you, after this morning, liquidate, begin 20% of your assets back to indigenous leadership and African-American leadership as a beginning step of how we can actually create reconciliation. There has to be reparations first to build trust that has been broken. So that's your homework assignment, and we'll see how you do. I think there's going to have to be a lot of heartbreak, crying, and reality that if we really want peace, the great peacemaker who is indigenous, who walked many hundreds of years ago, said, without the soil of 100% justice, there can never be peace. And I hand over my friend and mentor, who's going to speak around really the indigenous viewpoint of this justice movement, Christine Nobis from Indigenous Iowa. And may love be with you on this great work ahead of us. Thanks for having us here. Blessings.
Hello. Thank you for having me here today. Can you hear me? Well, okay, cool. Well, Ethan is, he said a lot of pretty powerful things, and I guess I'm here to speak to that from a Native American perspective. I recently spoke to a group of Mennonites in Iowa City, and they asked me to speak about specifically the doctrine of discovery. And I don't know if your church has also taken this this up to discuss, but this is something I know that's going around the Mennonite community in North America, so I thought maybe I'd address it here as well. You know, the doctrine of discovery has, you know, many names and expressions. It's also known as, you know, the white man's burden, manifest destiny. You know, it's expressed in slogans like kill the Indian, save the man. It can also be, you know, known as progress, expansion, proselytization, the frontier, divine destiny. And then also, something that I'm going to speak specifically about with you guys is missionary work, the idea of mission. And I want to speak about how the idea of mission is fundamentally flawed, because the doctrine of discovery is essentially the foundation for the idea of mission work. I know that a lot of people now are trying to change that and understand that when we go into indigenous communities or oppressed communities, that there's no intention necessarily to proselytize anymore, but that just the actual act of going into an oppressed community, going through crisis, that missionary work is actually quite dangerous, and that it brings with it that notion of the white man's burden and manifest destiny just by the sheer act of helping. And I know this sounds probably kind of strange, right? Why would going into a community and helping them be doing the almost the opposite of what we're trying to achieve? And that's because often at times I don't think we realize that by going into these communities, we end up actually converting quite a lot of people in the end. And these are people that essentially give up their cultures and traditions and even their identities as indigenous people. And then that's just one more person that we lose to our fight to hold on to cultures and traditions that have been shattered. And so I'm just asking today for people to just think about that. To think about how, with the best intentions, how something can actually be turned around and maybe not be, you know, working in the way that we think it will. And then when we get to this idea of reparations and atonement, that maybe the real way to be helping around this world is to be providing people the means to help themselves. Because, you know, we're pretty powerful. Indigenous people. I mean, I'm standing here today because my ancestors were pretty tenacious. And I can practice my cultures and traditions because they were so powerful and strong and able to get through the genocide and the colonization and provide me with these, I would say, hidden gems of understanding of the world that might have been lost. You know, and then we have to just think about, like, what is Christianity founded upon, and is it serving us anymore? Because, you know, this doctrine that God gave man dominion over the earth is truly, in my opinion, the cause of climate change. It's a basic fundamental belief that man owns the earth and that he can do whatever he wants to it, and there's no consequence because it's divine. But, you know, let's think about it from an indigenous perspective. And in most indigenous cultures, including the ones in Europe, before the colonization of Europe, people believed in the mother, and they believed and believe still in the earth as a relative. So it's a really different perspective to view our earth. If you think of the earth as a relative, as your mother, you want to make sure that she's healthy and happy. And if she's not, well, we're in trouble. And we are in trouble right now. As Ethan said, 50% of the species have been wiped out. And how many millions and millions, perhaps even a billion or more people, have been wiped out by colonization? And, you know, religion is key to the process of colonization. The process of colonization, or the act of colonization, is to go take land for the sake of, you know, just to live on it or for its resource, and in the process mitigate the local population either through annihilation or assimilation or just use of the bodies as a workforce. And the process, and in that process, the act of assimilation, as we know, is very much linked to religion. So in this case, you know, I that's why I sometimes think, if we're talking about nonviolence, if we're talking about moving forward, I sometimes think of mission work as a form of violence in that sense, because it's still perpetuating the process of colonization and the process of the loss of our cultures and traditions, not necessarily with an intention to do that. But, you know, for instance, in Africa right now, the Mennonite church is growing, like, exponentially. And that really scares me, because what's happening is every person, like I said earlier, every person that gets baptized is giving up something extremely important to what I think is going to actually save us. An ideology, a way of thinking, a way of being on this earth that I think can save us. I think it's time to start listening to what indigenous people have been saying for quite a long time, you know, in Africa, in North America, in South America, in Australia, everywhere. They've been saying, like, what are you doing? You don't understand that if you mine that whole mountain, it's going to cause destruction. You don't understand that you can't dam that river because then we can't fish anymore. Or that if you take, you know, all of this oil and pump that huge amount of it, and if it spills, we're in trouble. They have been saying this. My ancestors and your ancestors, all of our ancestors, have been saying this for a long time. You know, take it easy. But the fundamental understanding of, you know, British imperialism and, you know, Christianity and all of the codified texts, frankly, tell us to get bigger and better and go further and be stronger. And that's led to the rise of capitalism and consumerism. And that's just problematic because this is the type of thinking that eats itself. It's constantly having to get bigger in order to survive. And we have to break that cycle somehow. So I ask you today to think about what mission work means to you and what it means for the earth and for the future of humanity. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Christine. I stand here as a Quaker in that it's hard to take these things in our hearts and be transformed through grief. And what we're doing in this, each one of us, is so imperfect. With the Possibility Alliance, we live without petroleum and we don't charge any money and try to be outside of capitalism, but it's still so imperfect. But I guess what I want to say to bring it back to everyone in this room is each one of you is unique in the entire universe. Your life, your perspective, the gift and the purpose you have, if you don't live it, will be lost forever. There's some extraordinary gift. As they speak, one shall be the eyes and the hands. And so the invitation is, if you don't bring forth what God and love wants you to bring forth, that vision for the beloved community, it will be lost forever. And that's a great, great grief. So with our last... I want to just invite 3 minutes to turn to someone next to you and just breathe deep and just speak. What is the world your heart wants to see? Without any evidence it could happen. Maybe you had that vision as a child. Joanna Macy, a wonderful teacher in The Great Turning, says you could frame the question as, what would you do if you knew it wouldn't fail? If right now, an angel appeared and said, what you chose right now would not fail. So your cynicism and lack of power, that all this that we have in us, that as Gandhi says, one human being connected to love and God can overthrow an empire. So I want to invite you to just take just a minute each, turn and look in the eyes of another person and realize this person won't exist in the history of the universe. We walk by each other every day and forget we're that amazing and unique. And just, what would you do if it would not fail? Just to hang on again to that vision. Because I think St. Teresa of Lisieux says, God doesn't put that vision in to play a trick on us. It's real. It's meant to come into the world. So turn to a friend. Take a couple minutes and share. What is your heart burning to do? What would you do if you knew it wouldn't fail? You have 3 minutes. Go. Thank you. It's an important conversation, and I want to invite Christine Nobis back on stage just as we close. Thank you for your trust to be disturbed But also the invitation is not to leave with guilt or shame, but leave with a heart to act. And through action, I think that's where we find redemption. Thanks so much.
This will be available as an audio podcast. If you're wanting to listen again or maybe share it with some others and start thinking together, join this movement. That's why we do the audio podcasts.